Hey guys, it's Akshay here from Untitled Gadget, and I know it's been a while since you've heard my voice, but today is a special occasion. We have one of our favorite guests back for a very special game review, and that's Marvel's Spider-Man 2. That's going to be releasing on the PlayStation 5 later this week. What's up, Rishi? How's it going?
Busy. It's that time of the year where every publisher thought it's a good idea to jam the release schedule with more games than we know what to do with. So, been in a lot of games, been playing a lot of them. So, Spider-Man was just one of them. And then there were a few others like Mirage, EA FC 24, and even Cricket 24. Or if you're lucky, Cricket 24 Indian Edition, as Sony likes to call it. So, yeah, it's just been games and more games at this point.
Yeah, I think 2023 is probably one of the best years for single-player games. I think I said that in a tweet. And I feel that it was high tide coming with all the other stuff that's been, you know, berating gamers for a long time. And finally, in a span of 6 months, we've had such incredible games. And we're going to talk about another one hopefully today.
Oh, you mean Baldur's Gate 3?
Yeah. And then Cyberpunk was incredible. I personally love Starfield because I like Bethesda games. I mean, classic Bethesda games a lot. And then there's so many other games to play that I just can't catch up with everything.
Oh yeah, I agree. And to be honest, even I did like Starfield. And from a perspective of, I mean, it's reached a point when you have games done in a certain style and certain way, they have their audience and user base. So to me, it's more of a stylistic choice to make a game that's in line with previous releases. And I think that's perfectly fine. So even though you had a lot of people crying about, oh my God, they didn't do something new. Oh my God, they didn't do something different. And you have all the Todd memes doing the rounds. I still believe that it's done enough for the audience it's targeting. So to me, it's like, yeah, one of the cooler. I liked it from a point of view of how they stayed true to the core Bethesda experience. But at the same time, actually gave you some cool new toys to play with. So I'm with you on that one. But we're not here to discuss Starfield. No, we're here to discuss another game starting with S, Spider-Man 2.
Well, technically it's Marvel Spider-Man 2, but the whole world is going to call it Spider-Man 2, so might as well call that. We've both played it and we've both finished it as well. I'm not sure if you've platinumed it. I have not. There's no chance I have done that yet. But yes, we finished the main story and we're going to talk about whatever we are allowed to talk about.
Yeah, pretty much. So, I mean,
what are your initial impressions?
So before I get to initial impressions, to anyone listening, this is recorded a couple of days before the game's embargo. And we can't get into story spoilers, sadly. So,
and rightfully so.
Yeah, and to be honest, there's a lot of it which I feel you'd want to experience yourself as well. So even if we could talk about spoilers, we wouldn't. I haven't platinumed it either, but I do plan to platinum it when I have time. Simply because this is one of those games where I really want to explore more of the story. But yeah, from a first impressions perspective and from what we can talk about, the reason I really liked 2018 Spider-Man wasn't just for the story or the visuals, but mainly for the gameplay. The moment-to-moment traversal was one of the greatest things ever for me. And it was quite hilarious because the year that game came out, I wasn't in a great place mentally, and that basically was one of the games that really lifted my spirits and got me out of a very, very, very dark place in a very, very dark time. So to me, 2018 Spider-Man has a very special place in my heart. And that's what makes it very tough to follow up for, you know, a true sequel. And I'm happy to say that the traversal here is amped up. I really like what they've done. The fact that you can web fly your way through New York is really cool. And it works with the... The traversal complements the map so well. Because, I mean, as someone who got burnt out after 90 plus hours on Assassin's Creed Valhalla, I like the fact that I can zip from one end of New York to the other, find a bunch of cool things to do, and still come back feeling refreshed. It's like I want to keep playing what's there. I want to keep experiencing what's there because it's got that right level of size of map plus a right number of activities where it feels dense. So I mean, the Yakuza games do that really well, right? You can't walk 10 yeah. steps without getting into some cool side adventure, which yeah. I really like as well. So I think it's, from an open world perspective, that gels really well with the design, with the traversal. Because flying from one part of the map to another, or just even web slinging from one part of the map to the other, it still feels like a joy. Flying in itself is a cool mechanic, which I feel is, I mean, what I'm trying to understand is how it can't get better than this in terms of traversal. So
what I want to ask is, how many times did you use the fast travel feature?
Zero. I did not use it at all.
I used it once, and that's because I forgot about it. The entire game, I kept swinging from one end to the other of the map, and all of a sudden, I'm like, hold on. I remember seeing some video that showed some the fast traveling feature. I'm like, let's just use it once. And I use it once. I'm like, yeah, I mean, this is cool because it's very seamless, but the swinging is so well done in this game that you don't even feel the need to fast travel. Because I forgot about it completely. I'm like, oh, I didn't even know how to fast travel in the game before. I was like, how the hell do you fast travel? Oh, you have to complete a few activities of a neighborhood, and then the fast travel option will unlock, and then you can use it. And I'm like, have I unlocked fast travel for certain neighborhoods? Then I hovered over. I'm like, yeah, I've unlocked for almost all of them. Well, not all of them, but I would say 60% of them, and I still didn't use it. Even towards the end of the game, I didn't use it. That's how good the traversal in general is. And you were speaking about the gliding bit, right? I think by far that was my favorite mechanic in the game. As they've mentioned, the map is notably bigger than the previous games. And there are times that when you are actually... There were times I was not swinging at all. I was just gliding, because there are all these slipstreams all over the city, and you can just keep on going and going up over a subway, over the river, over a bridge, and you're technically flying. And that was my favorite way to travel, because, and that's why I probably never used the fast travel feature.
So what I did conscientiously is, the first time you progress opening up an area, it shows you that you have to get it to phase two of unlocks to unlock fast travel. And in my head, I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that. If I'm doing that, I'm doing that for the platinum run. But I don't want to do that, because I really like the moment to moment, right? And to me, it's like, yeah, the hallmark of it is just there. When you have fast travel as an option, you just don't want to use it. So I thought it was really cool. That was one of my... Personally, it's one of the best features. It's not the best, and I can't get into the best because spoilers. But I can say, yeah, this is right up there as one of the best reasons to play it.
100%. I mean, I can talk about this. For example, we're talking about the gliding bit, right? And I remember playing the first few hours when I'm playing it. I'm like, you know what would be cool? If there was a mini game attached to this. And then after a few hours later, you realize, yes, there is a mini game attached to it. I'm like, fucking hell. They've read my mind already. You know, they know exactly what they're doing. Insomniac knew that we've added a cool mechanic. Make a mini game out of it. And they, it was brilliant the way it was done.
Oh, yeah. And I also like the fact that the activities this time around at least add a lot to the overall lore. For example, you can find these bots, these drones, and if you're able to get they're all related to some version of Spider-Man or another, which I thought was really cool, and there is a good incentive to find them also. I thought that was nice, and even some of the attention to detail to some of the other suits you unlock down the line is also pretty cool. So to me, yeah, at least from that perspective, they've done a really good job. And I think also from the way you play the game, right? Like, so to be honest, right? Like, if I look at action titles like Devil May Cry or Bayonetta or even Vanquish, they're very relentless in their sense of pacing. You're never going to have a dull moment. You don't want to put the controller down because something bigger or better or crazier is around the corner. And I do believe here they've literally taken that mentality to this game, because once it starts, it does not stop getting crazier.
Which
I felt was fascinating to me to see a Western developer do this, because if I look at bigger games that have open worlds, there's always that lull period even in between. Even Final Fantasy 16 did that, right? Where you had a few sections where you had to do this fetch quest or this side quest just to progress, which kind of killed the pacing in certain aspects of that game. I felt like here I really like the fact that everything is side, it's optional. You can just blitz through, and the pacing is such that you want to keep playing through. So to me, that was like a highlight simply because you know a game is doing something right when it presents all the cool things to you that make you want to keep playing. And yeah. rather than, you know, oh, no, you have to grind to get this. You have to grind to get that.
Yeah, I hate that.
So I really like that. I really like the fact that there is like no holds barred. You'll keep going through. And go ahead.
And it feels natural because, like, for example, the side content you're talking about, there's a lot of stuff that you can grab, like tech parts, or you can solve some puzzles to get more tech parts or some other part that is somehow, not somehow, it is used for progressing your character, your build in general. But it is never like out of the way. Like if you're going somewhere, oh, here's a tech part on the building. There's a blue box. I might as well grab it because I know it's going to upgrade one of my gears. So, you know, like it's not like they make you go through this shit. And, you know, like, for example, let's say you're going on a side mission, a sizable side mission, not the main quest. But you'll always find that one of the Spideys that you can collect or one of the boxes you can open. And it's always on the way. I never felt that, oh, I have to go that far. I wish I had fast travel. This is why I never used fast travel, because everything was available near me. Anything that I wanted to grab or whatever mission I wanted to do. But yeah, I mean, this is the way games should be made, so that it respects your time. That's what I felt. I mean, in the beginning, I felt, I hope it's not like the other two Spider-Man. Let's hope there's something new. And then quickly, let's say after the first 45 minutes, I was like, yep, you know, I'm enjoying this game. I'm having a lot of fun. It respects my time. I literally woke up in the morning and I wanted to play more of it. And not many games can do that.
I agree. And to be honest, New York is basically the equivalent of Kamurocho from the Yakuza games for me. Because, you know, like you said, right, you don't have to walk far from the next cool thing to do or the next cool thing to collect. And I think, and with Yakuza, it was a simple question of, a simple thing of, oh, you don't have to walk far for the next cool side adventure. Here, it's like you don't have to walk too far for the next cool thing to collect, which will actually help you progress your build and, you know, take life from there. And I thought that was really nicely done. What I really liked as well is how they integrated stuff from the last two games into this one. And it
was flawless.
Yeah, and even if you haven't played the last two, you still aren't in the dark. So I like...
You're not left out.
Yeah, I like that too. It was done very well. And to be honest, even like the basic things, right? Like to me, DualSense on this game is impeccable. The way you use your web, you can sling web, the way you can traverse, and even some of the QTEs which are attached to adaptive triggers, I thought that was really well done and really added to the immersion. 3D audio is also surprisingly good. So I plugged in a pair of wired Sony monitor headphones, which I picked up for the PS5, because by that time I had given up on them announcing wireless earphones that would work. And it actually sounded pretty good. The spatial, the 3D audio across the game was really cool. It was pretty consistent. So to me, like, yeah, from a technical and use case perspective, if you have a PS5, yeah, it's a no-brainer to pick this up, because it actually uses the tech well. That's the other part of it, which I thought was.
Very well. And it's not a tech demo. It's a proper full-fledged game. And I think there's no other game apart from Ratchet and Clank, another Insomniac game, that takes full advantage of the hardware, in my opinion, at the moment.
Oh, I agree, 100%. And one other really cool thing which was there was, from a music perspective, it's amped up 7 Ways to Sunday. For the longest time, my go-to track on Spotify was Wobbly Jets Alive from the first game. What they've done here with the music, with Swing, which is the opening track, which is really cool also. So I think it's, in a lot of ways, a good improvement over the last game. There are some things which purists may not agree with in terms of story, but and I'm one of them who have some issues with some of the storytelling bits, but there's nothing that keeps you from playing it. There's no blocker, there's no, oh my god, you have to grind and do this boring side quest to get through. It's a smooth playthrough, you know, and that makes me want to come
even
back.
The side quests plugs in well. One of the major side quests plugs in really well with the main story. It doesn't progress until you've progressed the main story.
Oh, nice.
I can't mention which one, but I think you know which one I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So that's the thing, right? It's got that balance.
Yeah. That's what I love. Like the side quest that I really loved, let's say it's a secondary story. It's not even a side quest, actually. It's a secondary story within the game. And it goes parallel with the main story. That's what I loved about it. Like, it's not like, oh yeah, I can get it. I can finish this secondary quest right now and then do whatever and then do the primary quest. No, you have to wait a little bit. You have to complete the main story for the second, you know, secondary story to progress. And that's what I love because it fits in so well. But let's not talk about the story. I want to talk about the combat mechanics. How is it different this time? How is it similar this time? And whether you like it or not?
Well, I mean, the combat mechanics are a fun one because they've essentially... they've done a lot. I mean, come on, everyone knows Venom's in this game, right? So they've used his stuff to... it's done well, right? The way you evolve and unlock those things are cool. The new powers are great. They gel well with the older stuff. Swapping between Miles and Peter is also pretty cool. That ties in well. And there are a lot of missions where Miles is with you, or if you're Miles, Peter is with you, which I thought was cool. But they also got that balance right, where you have missions where it's just one of them, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
to me, what I really liked in terms of moment-to-moment combat was it still felt slick. It's not, and while it added new things, there was never pressure on you that, oh my God, I have to know how to use this feature or not. So to me, yeah, there's a healthy mix, right? You had your usual combos, which are there, usual, you know, press triangle and circle or square at the same time to do a flashy move, which gets your other ally involved if needed. Or you have the gadgets, which I thought were really cool. But to me, what is really...
abilities as well.
So what I would end up doing was I would end up experimenting more. In fact, I experimented more with abilities and gadgets in this game than I did in the past one, right? To me, it was I would switch between using the spider legs which you have at the back of your suit, which I thought was really cool. Or I would switch between different gadgets like the device which is, you know, club enemies together. And if you upgrade that one,
that's my favorite one.
Yeah,
that's my favorite one.
And if you,
I would club them together and then use the first one. The one that with the Iron Man, the one from
the Iron Spider.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that one.
I would basically upgrade the web gadget to a point where I could even web up brutes. So I would do that, and then I would knock him down once my ability meter was maxed out. So I really liked the fact that it was fluid. It felt fluid. It felt free-forming. And every time you do get hit, it doesn't break the power fantasy, but it makes you want to get a perfect combo at every shot and not get hit. So it does that really well. And to be honest, a lot of games do have a system where, yes, you do get rewarded for pulling off a perfect dodge. You do get rewarded for, you know, pulling off a perfect parry. But over here, because you're playing someone who is... I mean, let's be honest. Neither Peter Parker or Miles Morales are exactly what you'd call... they're not tanks. They're not tanky characters.
Yeah, they're not tanks.
They can take a hit when needed, but when you get hit, it makes you feel like you should be dodging more, even though the game gives you those allowances in terms of your health and all that stuff. So it does a great job of selling you on that power fantasy as well as the last games did, in my opinion. And that's... I mean, that's the best you can expect.
I feel they've... I mean, I agree with every single thing that you've mentioned because I did have one concern when I was going into the game, and that was boss battles. I felt that in the first two games, they were a little straightforward as compared to Marvel Spider-Man 2, and this time they've stepped it up big time. It's not like you can just go hit a few combos and you're done. I mean, it depends on the difficulty you're playing. But in normal, like, I died a few times. There's some things that you have to do while facing bosses, especially towards the end, that you cannot get away with. You know what I mean?
And they've also
incorporated the environment. Now, I can't talk about what they've exactly done because that would be spoiler territory. It's not technically gameplay mechanic. But yeah, you have to sometimes use your environment. And I love that because it's not a quick time event anymore. Of course, there are some QTE, you know, moments, but it's not. It's the major moments are not. You have to actually work hard. Like there was a time I had to go wipe off my ass because it was sweaty as hell, and I died twice in that boss battle. And I'm not going to mention which one it is. And it's not even towards the very end. So that's what I'm trying to say. Like, some boss battles are just really, really stepped up, in my opinion. And Insomniac has done a great job with that.
To do with the fact that they're sticking true to the source material. Because you're sticking true to the story, to the lore, to the source material, that, and that bleeds into the game design of the bosses really well in this game versus the last one, right? And that's where you have a situation where because you've had more attention to detail for aspects like that, to me the boss battles, some of them end up playing out like puzzles. If you aren't aware of the right things at the right time, or at least aware that, okay, this is how you need to beat a certain boss, you're not going to beat them. So yeah. I like that element of gameplay. I do feel that some of them, though, early on it's
a little simple, of course. Yeah. And yes, some of them are long, but yeah. I did not get bored.
Yeah, to me, that was the only concern. Some of them were a little more long drawn out than they should be. But by and large, yeah, they did a good job there.
One of my other favorite mechanics is that you can shoot your web and do your own stealth movements in this game. You're no longer confined to your, let's say if you're in a room, and if there's only one bar on the near the ceiling and you just keep running across it, you don't need to just stick to that anymore. You can create your own as well. And it greatly improves the stealth gameplay, in my opinion. I think I felt like I was playing Splinter Cell.
I found that it made it too easy, to be honest with you. Press triangle to create your own web. Yeah, so then what ended up happening is there were several locations where, okay, press triangle, created my own web, waited for a couple of enemies to come by, did a perch takedown on them, created another web of mine, did a perch takedown on all of them. And then by the end of it, you clear up a room in like 10 minutes, less than 10 minutes. But to me, I felt it was too easy, and it ended up being to a point where I would purposely screw up the stealth sections. I would just like, YOLO, let's go. Because I found it...
Let's see what happens.
Yeah, I found it way too easy after a point. And I get why they were doing that. From a designer perspective, I do understand that, look, you want to give players the tools to play out the stealth fantasy.
And the freedom.
And the freedom to play out the stealth fantasy. Perfectly acceptable. But personally, to me, like, I mean, come on, man. Like, as someone who's... One of my favorite games of all time is Dishonored and Dishonored 2. And, like, those games when it comes to stealth are the best, in my opinion. So I'm like, yeah, but do I really want to do this in a game where I'm Spider-Man, right? So to me, I felt that, no, I'd rather just go ham where I could. So yeah.
I only use it when I felt like doing it, especially in enclosed rooms, but not all the time. If I did that all the time, I would get bored. Yes, you said it right. Like, you need some action. But, you know, like, there were times when I was, for example, right after work, I would play this game. I'm extremely tired. I'm like, I want to take a chill for a minute. So let's do this instead, because I am in no mood to button mash right now. I need a coffee or something before I can start doing that. So that's what I would do. Like, you know, first couple of rooms, I would do that. And then later on, I would screw up. It's not like I purposely did that. Sometimes I would grab someone while someone else is looking at me. And then I'm like, fuck it. I have no other choice. Let's go get them. So, yeah. So it's a great... I had a very mixed experience. Not in terms of how I liked it. Or mixed mean a good mix of stealth and action, both.
Yep.
So I enjoyed that aspect a lot. Go ahead.
And while that to me at least was a mixed bag, what they did well was, so I mean, one of the major complaints a lot of people had with the first game were the sections where you played as MJ, because they were pure stealth, and you get discovered, it's game over, right? So a lot of people had issues with that, and I think this time around they've improved it tremendously.
Little bit.
Yeah, they've basically gone the MGS2 tanker route where you have the equivalent of a trank gun, tranquilizer gun. And I think it's made them
a... I mean, let's not talk about the later half. But yeah, I mean, you do... But you can also, like, if you get shot thrice, you're dead as well.
Yeah, I think they got... It happened with me. I feel they got the balance right.
It was quite balanced. Yeah, I think... but overall, I think... I am 100% satisfied. Yeah, 100% satisfied with the gameplay of the game. It's a lot of fun throughout, from the very beginning to the very end. Speaking of the story, like, we can't talk much about the story, but I will talk how I feel about the story. What I felt that, you know, in the beginning it felt a little slow, but when you get towards the later half of the game, it just doesn't stop. It is intense as hell. And that's what I like about it.
Yeah, that's a fast... I mean, yeah, I never found it slow. Because I'll tell you why, to me, what stuck out, even right now, the opening moments, and we can talk about this part, the opening moments when you're up against Sandman, I thought was insane.
Oh, that was brilliant. That opening is great. It's after that. It's after that I found a little slow for like half an hour, 45 minutes, and then things keep rolling.
I can understand why, because like I said, right, the
for new players,
it's a balance, right? If you're looking to play a Spider-Man and you have these sections where you're Peter Parker dealing with boring Peter Parker things, I can understand why people would get slow, but would find it slow, and I get that. For me though, I actually like those sections more because they built out Peter's character a lot more in this game than they did as the last one. The last one was fine, smart hobo. That was it. That was his character type.
There's a lot of depth to his character in this time.
And to me, I like those quiet moments because they built depth in his character and into Miles. I loved those moments. And I like the whole fact that, you know, the game, and we can talk about this, the game actually begins with Miles trying to put together his college application letter and Peter's trying to help him. I really like the fact that they built on the chemistry between those two in this entire game. And to me, this game was basically a bromance. And it was a fun, it was a wholesome bromance because it's basically like, you know, in a way, it felt like, you know, there's the teacher who's passing on the baton to the student. I thought it was done well. So to me, that was like, okay, cool. They got the quieter moments right. And as someone who's, you know, been like, I mean, I'm a big fan of the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, except for, you know, the third one. And I like the way it was done so well that it made me want to check out the other Spider-Man media like Spider-Verse and the recent...
Oh, you haven't seen Spider-Verse?
I haven't seen any of that. But I've read the comics, but that's about it. And to me, it's like, okay, fine, this is cool. I want to see more of this, see how this pans out. So I like those quiet moments because they added depth to some of the characters that are usually seen as one note, right? When you think of Spider-Man, relatable guy who can sling webs. But no, they've added depth to him. Even with MJ. I mean, to be honest, MJ's story arc as a former long-suffering journalist.
Hit a corner.
In the fields, man. Right in the fields. You write a story you're not too proud of and boom, SEO metrics go up. But yeah, I mean, I really, I was like, damn, man. And it made sense. I'll tell you why it made sense. Because the director on this team, Brian Intihar, used to work at GameSpot.
So he's lived through what we've lived through.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, man, you guys get me, man. And this is the second time Insomniac was able to do this because at the end of Sunset Overdrive, they actually thanked NeoGAF. And I'm like, wow.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, you guys get me. You guys know, you guys get this. So they're really good at plugging into bringing their own culture of games and their own culture into their games. And I thought it was really cool. They actually had a credit section where they thanked NeoGAF. And I was like, wow, that's cool. So with Sunset Overdrive. So with this, I was like, yeah, man, you guys got me here. I know where you guys are coming from. This hurts a little, but yeah, it's true. So I think those parts made it, just rounded it out a little more, made it a lot more cohesive in a way. And even the way they handled story arcs for Norman Osborn, Harry Osborn,
I felt those were quite
compellingly done. I thought that was iron. It's done in a very ironclad, watertight manner, which I felt made a lot of sense for
everyone's motivation. Made sense.
Yeah. It's a fun story. It's a fun understandable story, which, you know, I mean, fine. I mean, it sucks, man, that this is out in the same year as Tears of the Kingdom and Baldur's Gate 3. But to be honest, this is like fun. This is one of the games I can be like, okay, you may know of Spider-Man, but play it anyway. You may not be a fan of Spider-Man, play it anyway. So they've got,
you know, you've said my keyword of the year is fun. Like, I'm done. This is in general. I'm done playing games that aren't fun in general. Like, if a game is fun, I want to play it, which is why I love so many Nintendo games, because there's just pure fun. And this game successfully captures that, you know, like, it's never a dull moment, as you said. And it reminds me of my times in the early 2000s, late 2000s, my college time, where every game that I played, I was having a lot of fun. And partly because this game is not a massive 60-hour game. And that's what I sometimes crave, is a shorter experience, but still fulfilling. And Marvel Spider-Man 2 is exactly that. It's not too long and it's not too short. It's perfect. Like, it's like, how should I put it? I think it's like how when I played Mass Effect 2 for the first time. You know, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. I never felt that, oh shit, this is dragging along. In fact, probably Mass Effect 2 was probably more dragged along than Spider-Man 2, you know what I mean?
And see, it's also a question of type, right? Like, I mean, to me, the greatest way to look at it is looking at pizza. So, for example, you have a certain amount of money. You can spend it on Pizza Hut and Domino's and get more pizza for the same money. And eventually, you're gonna get bloated on just having pizza and more pizza. Or you could spend the same amount.
Or if you're like me, you'll throw up by like 11 p.m.
or you can spend the same amount of money, but you get less pizza from a hole in the wall place that's really good, like East 7 Delhi, and which is like a hole in the wall in my side of the world. And it's really good pizza, but it's super expensive. But hey, it's the same price. But you're paying for one pizza what you'd pay for two from Domino's or Pizza Hut, right?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's good pizza. So,
yeah.
And I think that's also how I feel, at least, not the game designers and developers, but the suits are looking at it, right? What's the value proposition? Can we say it on the box and on the store page that we have 1,000 hours of gameplay? That's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice if you're after a certain audience that's only looking at that metric, right? But then when you're to do that, also the developers take shortcuts, right? So you have procedurally generated areas. Like Starfield is one example, right? That gets dragged in discourse. But I do believe, like, look, there's an audience for that. There are people who want that. Sometimes you just want more of Domino's and you don't want to have the good stuff. Sometimes you want the good stuff, the good stuff's there. So, and then you have the rare exception that's everything and more, which is Baldur's Gate, which does your 100 plus hours of gameplay, but it's all handcrafted. Right?
Like Persona. Yeah,
Persona as well, right? Persona 5, Persona 3, Persona 4, they do that brilliantly as well.
You don't get to notice the 100 hours you spend in those games.
No,
you don't notice it.
So, you know, to me, it's just a question of preference. It's just a question of market fit. And I do believe that as gamers get older, as gamers have more spending power, also come more responsibilities that keep you away from your games. And I do...
I mean, we've both got white hair. I mean, I'm sure we've reached that point.
Right? And more than that, like, it's also fun to see certain developers take that into account. So Yoshi P, the executive producer on Final Fantasy 14, has actually gone ahead and told the fans that, hey man, we want you to stop playing our game. When a new expansion's out, you'll know it's out. We don't want to keep dragging you back. We want you to feel like it's a chore. And like I said,
that's the reason why I'm going to start Final Fantasy 14, because I read that interview and he's like, yeah, you could just come back to it anytime you want. You shouldn't feel obliged to play the game. And that's why I'm going to start that right after this.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So, you know, I think there is a market for all of this and more. And to be honest, like, you're going to have a situation. I mean, there's a reason why we're seeing a resurgence of indies, right? We're seeing the fact that Steam has been resurfacing them in a large way. Xbox Game Pass has helped with the indies in a large way as well, as has, you know, Nintendo's own efforts. And all those, not all those indies are a million hour games. They're like, you know, 10, 15, 20 hour experiences, and they're done well. So I do think that we're going to see a situation where the market gets a lot more splintered in that regard. But to me, what's refreshing is that you had a AAA game willing to take that bet. That's still, to me, in 2023, I cannot believe that's still very novel, right? Today, if you had the same, and the worst, it's only Sony who's doing it, right? Today, if
nobody else.
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft did it with Halo Infinite, but then, you know.
That's a shooter. Yeah. It's different.
Yeah, so to me, I really like the fact that, you know, with an open world game, they took that shot. And I mean, there was someone who did tweet out that it took them 30 hours to plat the game, which is like, yeah, great, good. And there is going to be story content down the line.
That's a perfect amount of time.
Yeah, there's going to be other story content down the line as well. So I think it's a safe way to think about it, right? I like the fact that that developers are willing to take more constrained and a more contained approach, which I like in a situation.
You know, what also it helps... I have a few friends who are not like us, whose life is not entirely about gaming, right? They'll probably play a game once or twice a week, or maybe a month. Not all of my friends are gamers. I'm probably pretty sure some of your friends are not all of them gamers, but they do want to play a game because they have less time and they don't know what to play. And then they get intimidated by games like Valhalla and like, oh shit, I don't have time for 60 hours to play. But I'm like, this is an easy game to recommend. Listen, you'll be done with this game in 2 weekends.
Pretty much. Like, and a lot of my friends who are getting into gaming, my general recommendation to them is, oh, you have a PC? Okay, is it circa 2010s? Oh, great. Here's Firewatch. Here's Tacoma. Here's Gone Home. Here's Oxen Free. And if you want something else, here's VA11 Hall A, which is Leet Speak for Valhalla, which is a cyberpunk bartending simulator. That's a 10-hour experience. That'll blow your mind.
Yeah. So and it's amazing. And then there are indie games like Hollow Knight, if you want to play that. So, you know, and this fits right, you know, very, 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 very well in between all these experiences, much like the previous Spider-Man games, Ratchet and Clank. That was not a particularly long game. And I enjoy this length very much. It's probably the old man in me speaking this, but I don't mind it.
It's fair, right? Like, at the end of the day, you want value for money, and I think that's where they got.
Yeah, this is value for money.
But all that aside, the other thing which I found really cool with this, and it's something I'm actually going to go back to just to find more of, is this whole sub-story between the Danicast and JJJ's podcast, J. Jonah Jameson's podcast.
I have no idea.
Oh, so they were both podcasts tend to sometimes... First, they give very polar opposite news on what's a polar opposite perspective on the news that's happening in New York at any given time. And there are one or two parts.
Oh, you mean in the game?
Yeah, in the game.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were talking about a real podcast in real life. The two podcasts, yes.
That's like one reason to go back. It's like, okay, the content's so compelling, I want to go back and find more of it, right? And there's one of them where you're basically taking pictures of people in New York, which I think was there in the first game, but I don't know. No, I don't think it was there in the first game. It is here. It's here at least. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you take pictures.
Yeah, and the context you get after taking each picture, I thought was also really cool.
A lot of it is very rooted in the city history, by the way.
Yep.
It might be fictional at times, but there is some reality to it.
Yeah, so to me, it's like, yeah, cool. This is cool stuff I want to check out more of. So... I do believe they got those other things right as well. They didn't need to, right? We didn't need to have J. Jonah Jameson's podcast or the Danny cast there. But they've actually done a good job of incorporating them in the game and making them feel a part of the world. To me, that I had a lot of fun just swinging through while listening to those audio snippets. I thought it was really cool.
Everything that you did in the game, somehow they could react to it. And of course, JJ would be JJ. As usual, and then you get the other side. It's kind of like emulating real life news, but a much toned down version, obviously. But yeah, I enjoyed that. I mean, it's a good background, not information, I would say. It's background.
It's good. It just helps build out the world better. I thought that was cool.
It's like GTS radio.
Yep, pretty much. And one other cool thing which was there, which I do think that people shouldn't sleep on. Is some of the new suits. I don't want to spoil it, but there's some good ones which are related to Spider-Verse and stuff which you should check out. I do like the fact that they went the extra mile in terms of animation. I do like the fact that they went the extra mile in just...
And there are two of them at least.
Yeah. Those two are really well done. And I do think that that's the kind of TLC you want to see, man, in a game. And that's like, yeah...
Which is why I actually wanted to ask, when I asked earlier, like, you haven't seen the Spider-Verse, I still haven't?
I haven't have just yet. I mean, I've got access to them now, but I haven't checked it out just yet.
So, yeah, because the second one's just came on Indian Netflix, and I would say it's probably the best animation movie right now, and this encompasses Disney movies and whatnot. I think this is the best, like, as a Spider-Man fan, you will absolutely love it. I love animation movies in general, and I think it's the best one right now. Like, both movies are really, really good.
Yeah.
You should definitely watch it.
I will.
And you can see that those movies have influenced these games, by the way. Both Miles Morales earlier and Spider-Man 2 now. It has influenced this game in some way, like, in the storytelling as well. That's why I think it's so good, because it's taken the right inspiration from the right source material. I have to ask you this question though, and you don't have to give me an explanation if you want to. Who do you prefer? Which is your preferable Spider-Man? Is it Peter Parker or Miles Morales?
Man, so first half of the game was Peter Parker, but second half of the game ended up being Miles, and for one specific reason is, so I mean, look, they've obviously
don't give the, you don't have to give the reason if it's spoiler, don't give the spoiler. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, look.
Okay.
for everyone who's watched Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 3, you'll know why I made that decision, all right? It's simple as that. I don't have to say more on that matter, but yeah.
Even I haven't seen it, by the way.
Oh, you haven't seen it? Oh, man. You, like, yeah, so basically in Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 3, he goes full emo because he has the symbiote that's helping him and stuff.
No, I've seen clips, which is why I never saw it.
Yeah. So essentially, similar stuff here, and which is why to me I prefer Miles at the second half of the game. Plus, another reason for that is how they showed him grow as a character, right?
Yeah.
What the lengths he goes, like, I mean, people know Kraven's a part of this game. The lengths he goes to uncover that mystery and do stuff there, I thought was impeccable. It was really cool. And how his story arc, to be honest, even as his story arc grew, I thought it was really cool. The things they did and the callbacks they did to the first game, to the second game, and how that actually, by the second game, I mean Miles Morales, Spider-Man Miles Morales. They tied it up really well and showed a really cool character progression. I found him to be, after playing Miles Morales Spider-Man, I thought he was kind of like, you know, side character types. But here they really bring him into his own more than Miles
you took the words out of my mouth. I was just about to say that Miles Morales is not a side character in this game.
He's not, and which is why
he plays a pivotal role in the story, and the way it's pulled off, it's actually really, really good. And sometimes you feel like a badass playing as Miles, helping people in this main story. And I actually saw even the side content when you're doing some activities around his school, I found them to be really endearing. Some of them I really liked, some of them I didn't do all of them obviously, but the ones that I did, I loved them.
So that's the thing, right? They really brought him into his own, and I felt that was, to me, from a storytelling perspective, from a character building perspective, was one of the coolest things. I love the fact that he actually has interactions with certain characters that Spider-Man has bested. I like the fact that he's actually shown as growing, struggling, and to be honest, his arc in this game to me was the highlight. I really like that.
Yeah.
Because even in the final parts of the game, right, you can tell that he's the voice of reason. And I'm like, that's cool to see. That's cool for them to push out. Because what tends to happen is it's never the kid who's the voice of reason, but they've done it well here.
Yeah. They've done it really well. I really liked it. Yesterday, or was it yesterday? Well, we can't really date this if you're listening this on release day. But on Friday last week, you shared a screenshot of all the places that will be doing a midnight launch for this game in India. And considering the last one that you went to was, well, the one I witnessed, well, I saw online, was Ragnarok. What are you expecting for this one?
Honestly, here's the thing. With Ragnarok, that's with the God of War franchise in general, the audience is your dyed-in-wool, by and large, dyed-in-wool Sony fanboys, dyed-in-wool people who've been with Sony since the PlayStation 1, and then everyone else, right? So that audience is going to be enthusiastic and want to check it out, right? So the audience is a mix, in my opinion. This one, ideally, Spider-Man should be having a bigger audience or the same audience, right? At least in terms of volumes, not in terms of mindset. Mindset here is a little more broad-based because it's Spider-Man after all, and Spider-Man has a big following here to begin with. So to me, it's just a question of, with Ragnarok, people only knew at the very last minute there was a midnight launch, right?
Yeah.
Here, at least people know a few days earlier. Now, how much of that will impact people going to a store and picking up? How much of that will impact people who pre-ordered or went digital? I don't know. But I would say that, at least in Mumbai, I'm expecting a decent turnout. And if I look at it, I'll tell you why. From a business split, we're still pretty much a situation where I do believe that around 60-70% of the sales are still in metros. So that's Mumbai, Delhi, Bangalore, mm-hmm. Hyderabad, to an extent. But the tier 2s like Pune are still catching up, Nagpur is still catching up, and the new sales from there are actually higher than in the metros. So I do think that it'll be interesting to see what that split is this time around. Because if I tie it in into the bigger picture of Sony and their sales targets for India, I have heard that they're looking to chase 300-350K units sold by the end of the year. Global context, they want to hit 25 million, right? Now, you have bundle after bundle after bundle that's already been announced. But if I look at the audience that's buying those bundles, if I look at the audience that's coming in right now, it's very similar to the audience that was there when the console was hard to find in 2020, 2021. And that audience was, to a large degree, right, outside of those of us who've been on PlayStation since PS1 onwards, to a large degree, the audience that's coming in now, the new buyers, are people who have been playing on mobile and want to upgrade their experience and want to try other stuff, try something new, try something different. It's still that...
Plus, there's more awareness as well this time around compared to PS3, PS4.
Pretty much. And that audience that's coming in, they're people who've grown up on mobile. They want to experience something different. It's an aspirational audience. It's a younger audience that's coming in. And I don't know if they're the kind of audience that would line up on day one, right? I'm not sure whether they do that, right? But the way I see it is, because you have such a large number of people coming in who are looking to buy, who are looking to play the game, who are more interested in what Sony is doing, and the fact that Sony itself has finally been doing marketing here, right? They branded an entire metro train in Mumbai for Spider-Man, which I thought was really cool. And they are going to be doing a lot of stuff. They've already been doing a lot of stuff at retail as well, and that's helped. So, I mean, I would look at it from a perspective that we should see... I'm not talking about as, oh, are we going to see lines on a midnight launch? I'm looking at it from perspective, the month one, month two sales should be in line with Ragnarok, which I think was around 40 to 50,000 in that first couple of months. I think we should be seeing something in that range for this game.
Hopefully.
If not more. And the demand is there. You know, the pre-order numbers have been very good. This year, two games have shown really great, strong pre-order numbers at retail, which is Assassin's Creed Mirage and this game. So, I don't know if this is going to end up doing better than Mirage at pre-orders, because Mirage's price was a lot lower to begin with. One.
Yeah.
And two...
Plus, Assassin's Creed has a good foothold in India in general.
Insane foothold. So, I don't know whether this will beat that on the pre-order. And it's also unfair comparison because Mirage was cheaper, right? Mm-hmm. So, but I do know that this will hold its own. Will it mean that we see crowds at midnight launch? I don't know, but I'm fairly confident that month one, year one sales will be on par with Ragnarok, if not better, at the very least. Because so there's also one thing we're forgetting. Yeah. There is a bundle, there is a Spider-Man bundle that's going to come out. It's just a matter of when they announce it. So,
So the one of the stores that was mentioned in the list that you tweeted, earlier in the week was the Sony store at Club Road in Punjabi Bagh. This is just a local reference for people from Delhi. 2 weeks ago, I was in that area, by the way. I had gone for dinner with a few friends of mine, and I passed that store, and they had all the Spider-Man advertising already set up. And I thought of texting you and letting you know, hey, listen, they've already started to set up advertisements. Before I could do that, someone tweeted that to you on Twitter. Before that, even I could send that text. So I was like, this guy probably saw it 15 minutes before I did, because it was right around the same time. And I was right there. And people were walking out with PS5s at that time as well. Like two people, I think, were picking up a PS5. And it was at 9 p.m. too, or 8:30 p.m., something like that. It was odd. It was quite late. So yeah, I mean, people are gradually buying the console and, you know, picking up games. Sure, it's not the same pace as, Europe and North America, but, you know, it's getting there. And being Spider-Man, I think it could be a bigger launch as well because of, as you said, it's a very recognizable superhero. And if someone hears, oh, I can play a Spider-Man in a game, they might just show up.
I mean, that's an interesting one because there's been a lot of back and forth between me and, you know, a bunch of people in my DMs and people at retail. One part of the argument is, oh, Sony doesn't need Spider-Man because they've done that cricket deal, right? Cricket 24. They've gone ham on that game, right? They've done a really good job.
They have.
They've gone a really good job of pushing it regardless of the quality.
And what timing as well.
Yeah, right? Cricket World Cup is this month. They've got the timing right. They've done everything right. I feel so. The way I see it is, you have one argument that Sony doesn't need it because people are gonna buy Spider-Man anyway, right? And then you have the other argument that sure, Sony has Spider-Man anyway. Cricket though is multi-platform, and at the end of the day, the problem that tends to happen with cricket games in this country, and this has happened without fail since Don Bradman cricket, grey market will come with copies which are way cheaper than even Sony's bundle price in a week. So you can reach a situation where your local guy will give you whatever the offer price is on a standard PS5, less 5%, and your grey market copy of the game will be cheaper because, surprise, surprise, some enterprising distributor in the Middle East thought it was a good idea to do double of India quantity and decides to re-export it here, and all this illegal nonsense and not illegal, grey nonsense keeps happening.
Yeah.
So that's the risk that's there, and I feel that Spider-Man is a good deterrent to risks like that. You don't want a situation where the software isn't where it should be. And see, the software for cricket isn't Sony's problem, thankfully. It's EXPress's problem. And they know how to deal with it. But I feel that Spider-Man is necessary. And that's the argument that's there, right? Because while you have a one-game deal with Nacon, who's the publisher of cricket, Spider-Man's your IP. So you can do whatever you need to do. So I feel that is the difference. And I feel that you need first party. You don't have first party, what's the point?
I also feel like the cricket bundle is a great way to get the foot in the door.
Agreed.
And then you can cross-sell the Spider-Man when Spider-Man's available as well. Hey, listen, you're getting the cricket bundle anyway, and if you know, why don't you get Spider-Man 2? They can cross-sell Spider-Man 2 at the point of sale as well.
Yep. And besides, given the fact that Sony is going bundle heavy this year, I wouldn't be surprised if we see the Modern Warfare 3 bundle, if we see the Spider-Man bundle as well, and if we see, you know, whatever bundles are happening globally, do a copy-paste and have that here as well. They need to do that. The Cricket 24 bundle might be an India exclusive, but at the end of the day, they'll need more, right? You can't just do one or two bundles and be done with it. And I do think that it's now just a question of how they manage that expectation, because...
Wait, it's Cricket 24 is India exclusive? They didn't even do it in the in England, Australia, I don't know if they do Pakistan.
From what I am aware, it's an India exclusive, because it's straight up Cricket 24 Indian edition on the box. So that bundle seems to be an India exclusive. The part of concern I have right now is how they're managing the communications of their sales, because they've had like 3 or 4 discounts announced in the last 3 months. It's reached a point where people who want to buy are like, oh, maybe we should wait for the next discount. Maybe it'll be cheaper then. And that's not the look you want to have as a, you know, India's number one console. You should, you know, you should be able to manage that expectation better. And I feel that's where they've messed up, you know, because if you know that it's $4,799 now and it goes up, the MRP goes up by 10 grand in, let's say, a week, you're going to be of the impression, okay, it'll go when it drops again by 10K, I'll pick it up then. So that's the big problem I see, where they haven't managed that right.
And they've announced the PS5 Slim.
Yeah, that's not going to come here anytime soon. Let's be honest. By the time they get...
Not until the stocks finish, right?
No, more than that. There's BIS certification that they have to go through. I mean, we don't even have PSVR 2 yet, man. Let's be honest. Where is VR 2? Where is Portal? Where are Spider-Man faceplates? Right? So while the bundles are nice, at the end of the day, there are chinks in the armory and they're showing. Like, people who want these can't get these. And I mean, I have a friend who ended up paying double or triple of the going rate for Spider-Man faceplates to get it from MX2 of all places, which I can't even recommend to anyone. But he went into that because he's a fan. So my point is, they're still, while it's nice to see console gaming in ascendance, there are still a lot of areas they could do better on. Where are the in-zone where are the in-zone monitors, man? We haven't got those either. We have no idea if we're going to get the PlayStation branded earbuds either. So
earbuds. I was about to ask, the wireless earbuds, are they coming?
There are a lot of chinks in the armory, and it's a question of when they decide to address these and when they decide to bring that in. So yeah.
Are you gonna, speaking of stuff, I think the 19-inch Venom collector's edition is... You're not buying it.
I'm not buying it. It's very simple. No physical disc in the box. And that's why I'm not buying it. To give you some perspective, with Spider-Man 2018, I ended up buying the Spider-Man PS4 Pro. I ended up buying the collector's edition of the game with the statue. I ended up even picking up the art books because I really, really, really love that game. And I platted the game as well, right? So with this, I'm just going to pick up standard edition at midnight launch, because... my logic is simple. If you're doing a physical collector's edition and you're a what's your market cap as Sony? $1 billion, $2 billion, maybe more. Have the courtesy to at least bundle the disc in, man. You're charging me 15-16 grand. Have some shame. It's pretty shameless. So no, not touching it.
So they did the same with the Horizon Collector's Edition, which one, the one I bought, and I'm like, are you kidding me? You're giving me a steelbook, you're giving me the figure, you're giving me all the art book, everything physical imaginable, except the disc.
This is my point.
And then people are like, oh, it's for people who have digital consoles. I'm like, yes. So, you know, people who are, you know, they should just make a collector's edition for the digital PS5 separate.
Exactly. And it's, charge them a little less also, right?
The books that you're including in this collector edition, the art, the artwork and everything else that's in there is probably more expensive to make than the disc.
Yep. So that's the whole thing, right? Like, I mean, to me, I just didn't bother, which is why for Horizon, I just picked up the middle tier one, which had the steelbook and a mini art book. I thought that was really better value for money.
Yeah, it was.
I didn't bother with the collector's edition this time because I just didn't see the value. Quite frankly speaking, the way I look at it, same reason I didn't even bother with Ragnarok. Ragnarok didn't have a middle tier steelbook edition. If they did, I would have bought that. I'm just going to pick up the standard edition of Ragnarok. So, you know, I look at it from that point of view where you have the means, no need to nickel and dime and cheap out on things like this. Yeah, it's kind of cheap. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, standard edition at launch, hoping there's a reversible cover. But yeah, definitely going to pick that up.
Okay, I think we've discussed quite a bit about this game and the situation in regarding this game in India, midnight launch. But I haven't asked you a very important question, and I think we can end on that note. If you had to give this game, Marvel Spider-Man 2, a rating, what would you give it?
That's a good one. It's funny you ask that because that is something I have been thinking about. 8.5-9 in that range. 8.5-9. Wouldn't go higher than that. And for one specific reason is there are some things in the story I understand why they've done it, but I'm not the greatest fan of. So I would just dock a point and a half from there. But the rest of it, impeccable, worth playing. And again, see, those parts about the story is basically my own personal nitpicks with certain aspects of the game that I felt should be done better or not even there at all. And they're purely story related, not even gameplay related at all. So it's more of a story nitpick that I felt could have been done better. But so 8.5-9 in that range. If you love the first two games, you love this. If you haven't got into the franchise till now, now's a good time to get in. It's good, but yeah, that's how I would rate it.
So at my workplace, we rated out of 5. So I was at firm at 4.5. And if you double that, how Metacritic, it becomes a 9.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you are rating a game on the scale of 10, things become a lot more detailed.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm actually stuck between 9 and 9.5. I enjoyed the game a lot. I loved almost every aspect of the game. I just don't know if I can give a firm number or a rating. I would stick to 9 because that's the safest way to go about it. Because 9.5 and 10 categories gets a little tough. And I have to debate a lot with myself in my own head to give that rating. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get that. That's the dilemma you have all the time, which is why, to me, I always think, regardless of what scale the place I'm at usually is, I usually look at points up to 10 and halves. So to me, it's like 8.5-9 makes sense, you know? But then where I'm coming from, my debate is it even an 8.5? Because to me, it's more towards a 9 than an 8.5. So, how much do I value what's missing or what's wrong? That's my thing. So my concern isn't on the higher end of the spectrum. Is the lower end of the spectrum even valid? So it's in that range. And I think, yeah, safe to say 9 then. I mean, that's where I would split the difference and just go with a 9 because it's good. What's there is good. What's there is fun, you know?
Yeah. So I think it's safe to say that it's one of the best games that has come out this year. Well, has not come out yet, but it will come out soon. I've been thinking in my head that it's already out. And if you own a PlayStation 5, you will definitely enjoy this exclusive a lot. And eventually, if this comes on PC, I think those players should also experience this game whenever they can. Thank you so much for your time, Rishi, and thank you so much for sharing all your thoughts about the game, about everything that's happening with the launch of the game in India. And as usual, it's full of information that usually we can't find anywhere else.
Happy to help.
Thank you so much.